Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to another episode of Girls with Dogs. This is Kimberly, the blogger behind Keep the Tail Wagging, and I'm here with my dear, dear, dear friend, Kathy, the blogger behind Groovy Golden Doodles, and we are Girls with Dogs. So I'm going to start by saying today is going to be a short episode, a sad episode, because my friend had to say goodbye to her heart dog earlier this week. And so let's talk about it. How are you feeling today, Kathy?
It's a loaded question. The best way I can describe it is alone. There are people and another dog around me, but I'm alone.
Yeah. It's strange because there's like an adjustment period, but the adjustment period doesn't start right away. I feel like for the first, I don't know how long, it's just like a period of shock, maybe. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I think people who have gone through the same thing kind of understand.
Well, you know, it's not... For me, it's not necessarily shock as much as, let me start here for those that are listening. I don't want this to be a super sad, morbid podcast. I do feel that, and I told Kimberly this in multiple texts, which I don't text very much, so this was a lot, but she wanted to save me by having us not record today. And I said, no, because Harley is part of Girls with Dogs. And, you know, this whole podcast started because of the relationship that Kimberly and I have. And it goes all the way back. I mean, I was that person that you reached out when Blue passed. Mm-hmm. She was that person with Lee. She was that person again with Harley, as I was with Scout and Zoe. I mean, there's a connection between us, and it just, if we didn't have this podcast, we would have already spoken. I purposely stayed from her yesterday because I wanted to be able to talk to her today. So this is why we don't have our video on. This truly is going to be a Kimberly Kathy conversation in the most honest and raw sense. But to answer your question, it's not so much the shock. It's the fact that Harley and I made a pact a long time ago that I was never going to have to do this. But I realized so many different ways that he was trying to get me to understand that I was going to have to. I don't know how much longer Harley would have hung on, but it was becoming more and more painful just watch him literally deteriorate. Now, I am not going to measure the different reasons why we have to help our dogs cross the rainbow bridge. I don't have that expertise. I can only tell you that what was so difficult for me was the fact that there was physical and mental deterioration, but it wasn't anything that was causing, I don't know how to put it. You know, I had a therapy dog who any day now, the spleen was going to explode and implode. And it would have been just a horrible, painful, excruciating death for the dog. You know, your dog had cancer, and at some point cancer gets to that period where it just takes over the body, and you know, we watch our humans then become sedated until it's all over, or we take our dogs or our animals in. I didn't have that. What I had was this relationship that Harley and I had, and I knew what he was trying to tell me. So as I put briefly in the blog post that I thought that was so important, that writing is just so therapeutic for me. You know, when I left, actually, for the 6 days that I was gone, I actually gave her permission to cross the rainbow bridge. So when I got back and, you know, when Lee picked me up, the first thing I said was, "How's Harley?" I knew how he was because Lee continued to update me every day while I was away. But the first sign when I walked in the house that Wednesday, midday, he would not even get up to greet me. And so Annie and everybody who's ever looked at a video or read any of my stories or know me personally, Harley was always underfoot. And I think that's why I'm so lonely, because he's not underfoot. And for him to look at me laying down, willing me to come to him because he could not come to me to say, "Welcome home," that was a sign. Wednesday night, he slept down in the downstairs. As I said, Lee had put his things downstairs, and he was so sweet when he explained it to me. He said, "I moved all of Harley's things down in the living room because the stairs are just too difficult for him." Mm-hmm. And my initial reaction, I was angry because Harley's always slept where I sleep. And if you moved him in the living room, my question would have been, "Did you sleep down there too?" And I know that that didn't happen. So, but then he fixed it with his next statement by telling me, you know, he said, "Kathy, when we have members of our family, two-legged members of our family that age and that are with us and they can no longer make it up and down the stairs, we move all their stuff downstairs. Why would I not do that for him?" And I thought, touche, you know, you mm-hmm. nailed it with that response. But I couldn't sleep Wednesday night with him down there. I heard him stirring a little bit, and I went down and I sat with him, and I watched him walk around in circles. I watched him try to lay down, and it just takes so long for him to bend those back legs because they were just in so much pain. And so I remember laying with him, and I was crying because I was trying to tell him to go find Leo. I told him I would be fine. I was massaging his legs, and I was just pouring my heart out, and I was thanking him for everything that he had done to then listen. And the little thing was snoring. And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I went back upstairs. So Thursday was bath day, and I said to Lee, "I don't know what to do. I don't know whether to take him, don't take him. I've never taken one and not the other." I mean, literally, it's always been the two of them together or the three of us. So Lee said, "Take him and, you know, see how he does. Don't worry about the blow drying part," which I'd stopped doing, but just the fact that he was enjoying the warm bath. So we get him out of the car, we take him in. I tell Andy, I said, "Andy, I don't know how much longer Harley's got, but, you know, I wanted him to come." She says, "All right, just give me the afternoon. Let me spoil him." When I went to pick him up, Kimberly, he was just, like I said, it was like she had dipped him in the fountain of youth. Oh, he just pranced on out, begged for a cookie, tail was wagging. He didn't slip and slide, as we always, the three of us, to try to get him to the car. We got home. He scared Lee to death because Lee was like, "What the hell?" He ran into the house to get to his water bowl. Thursday night was the same thing. Friday, when I left to go to work, same thing. And then Saturday morning, it was a whole different picture.
Yeah.
And I mean, without going into detail, the decline was so rapid. And I kept thinking about how people would say about their own human family and loved ones that, you know, they have one last good rally. And it was almost like Harley waited for me to come back to have this rally.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to the veterinarian so many times in the last 10 days, and they were absolutely phenomenal. And they just said, "Don't worry, you will know. And when you know, we will accommodate you." And a series of things started to occur late Friday night with bowel control and everything. And just, he was just in his eyes. Sometimes he was there with me, but I knew. And then there were the moments. But how do you measure quality of life with 2 hours of a 12-hour day?
You know?
He could not do many things. I was holding his back legs up so he could complete his meal. So when I ended my blog post yesterday, I said, please continue to read because I have so much that I want to tell you. There's so much that I found out. The greatest thing I could have ever done for Harley and for myself and my family was make that quality of life appointment. You know, I was committing to nothing, but I wanted the subject matter experts, the veterinarians and the vet techs that have gone to school and have practiced and understand to be able to break it down. We spend money frivolously. It's okay spending money just to sit down and have them, like I said, we all kind of sat on the floor and we watched Harley and they touched him and they examined him and they loved on him and they explained to me everything that was happening, what was going to continue to progress, what measures I wanted to try to do to help. And then they actually gave me a link to a site. And this site is called Lap of Love. And it's for people, I think, like me, who don't know what to do. So it gives you something that you can tangibly read and reread and kind of let it sink in. But they also had a scale, Kimberly. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I thought I had reached the period where I needed to do this quiz, this scale. And I remember that it gives you numeric answers that you tally after you answer all these questions about your dog's quality of life and also about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gives you a breakdown of, you know, between this number and that number, what you, where you are in your assessment.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that I did mine and I didn't share it with Lee. I gave him a blank one. And I said, whenever you're ready, go ahead and fill yours out. And between the numbers of 17 and 30, it talks about the progression of what you're seeing and how maybe it's time to speak with a veterinarian about whether you want to continue with hospice care or go for, you know, a peaceful transition.
Mm-hmm.
And in that test, I thought I was being very conservative. A couple of times I had to go back because I was actually lying. You know, I was cheating because I knew the higher the score that I gave it, the higher my total score would be. And I didn't want that to happen. Then I had to go back and look at it. So when I finally was comfortable with each and every answer, I scored a 24.
Mm-hmm.
And it devastated me. And I so wanted Lee's to be so much lower. He kept it for 2 days. And as the rally kind of went away and the decline increased, he handed it to me one morning. And he was a 23.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday I knew. And so Monday I made the call.
Yeah.
It is an indescribable different experience. I didn't have to make this decision with Leo. Leo was 4. He wasn't 14 and a half. It's kind of like when somebody says, when you lose a grandparent. And I hate when they tell you, you know, that he lived a long life, as if to say that the longer you live, the less you mourn.
Mm-hmm.
But whether it was a shock with Leo or whether it was a decision that I had to help with for Harley, something very unique about the loss of a pet.
Yes.
I just don't think people understand. It is just absolutely indescribable.
The pain is shocking to me, especially when you know what's coming. That's what caught me off guard. I always thought Blue was a special event. Leo was a special event because it wasn't expected. And so I always thought that those would hit us harder. Sydney, she also wasn't expected. Even though I got 5 weeks, I wasn't taking her to the vet expecting to be told cancer and send her home to die. But with Scout, I had a year and a half to prepare for it. And his oncologist was very clear to me that this is what will kill him. This is what he will die from. There is no coming back from this. There is no cure for lymphoma. He will pass on from this. And so even though I knew that would happen, I still think back to the day when he declined. And it was a Friday. And we said, said goodbye on Saturday. And it was horrific. It was horrific. And nothing ever prepares you, you know, regardless if they're sick, if they're old, you know, whatever the case may be, nothing ever prepares you for that loss. It's like, I don't feel like I lost a limb, but there's just something so physically missing. And I feel like I spent the days after he was gone kind of searching for it. Like there was something I needed to remember, but I can't remember it. Oh, Scout's gone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got into bed last night at 8 o'clock because I didn't know what else to do. And it was kind of comical in its own morbid grieving sense. So it never dawned on me for the last 4 or 5 months how I had dedicated all of my time when I wasn't working to Harley. Like he followed me until he couldn't. Then I followed him because it was always this thing of, I don't want to go upstairs too early and leave you down because, you know, you start pacing and then you'd go behind furniture and get stuck in between chairs and stuff. I needed to always make sure I knew where you were. I didn't want you to fall and be in that awkward position and I not know it. So I have to pick you up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just piddle around downstairs until about 10 o'clock at night. So we could go out for one last potty and then come on upstairs. I never realized how much I was being a caregiver to this dog.
Mm-hmm.
Lee would call me at 3 o'clock in a panic. He's in a meeting and he said, Kathy, I thought I would be home by now. You've got Jax with you. And that means that Harley's been alone for like the last 2 hours or so. And I would just pack up. And I'd leave work and I'd come home. He'd still be sleeping in the same place Lee left him. But mm-hmm. it was the fact that, you know, he was not alone for a very long period of time. The crazy, right. We would have discussions at night and they were stupid, but they were stupid filled with nothing but love and admiration for a dog that gave so much of his life to so many other people. We would talk about the next day. What are you doing? Well, I got this, I got that. I can come home at 1 and let Harley out. And then I'd say, this is really dumb. So you can laugh out loud. I said, well, you know, Jax doesn't have to go to work with me tomorrow. We can leave Jax to take care of Harley. I would literally verbalize that. And I would leave Jax at home. Like he could pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or take him out to the bathroom. Just crazy, craziness. Yeah. In my heart, I have no doubt that I did the right thing. I just never wanted to do the thing.
Right.
And that's the part that I have to struggle with. Being a therapy animal coordinator, having a large team, having a blog and a podcast are all near and dear to me, but it makes this so public.
Yeah.
That, you know, I struggle, but I know that everybody's heart is in the right place and their love for me and for Harley and Jax is genuine. So I just decided that I will ride this emotional roller coaster for as long as I need to. I'm not ashamed to cry. I'm an ugly crier, but I haven't met anybody that looks and they're beautiful when they cry. So until I do, okay. I do have, it was really, again, morbid funny. They told us, you know, just wait here and we'll have the paw print for you. And we went outside and we're standing in the parking lot. And I looked at Lee and he said, "I know you." And so I looked at him. He said, "Hugging you right now is not a good thing." And I just had to look at him and smile. And I was like, yep, because if you touch me, I'm going to fall apart.
Yeah.
And so we kind of like stood like 2 feet apart from each other. And then I said, you know, this is stupid. I have to come back here with Jax for one thing or another. So I called. I said, I'm not waiting any longer. I'm going home. But I want to talk about Jax for a minute because I really want to do some research and I want to find out some more about this. I think I alluded to you once or twice that for 8.5 years, Jax idolized Harley. I mean, just would do absolutely anything to just be close to him, you know? And it had always been like that. At first, Harley treated him like trash. It was almost like, when are you leaving? Why? And then there was this slight shift and it was like, well, you're not going. So I guess I need to work with you. So then he started training. And then I guess Jax became about 4. And Harley then, which he never did with Leo, let Jax in closer to me. And it was almost like, okay, you're always going to be the baby of the family. You're never, ever going to grow up. You're always going to want to be next to her. So I'm okay with that. But about 6 months ago, Jax started distancing himself from Harley. And it got more and more obvious. I mentioned it to Lee initially, and he didn't really understand what I was talking about. And then he started to watch. Over the last 5-6 weeks, you know, Harley had bad cataracts in both eyes. One was major. The vet told me he could probably see shapes and some shadows, and the other was minor. So I think when Harley walked into a room, he gravitated to the biggest thing he could see that maybe moved a little bit, and that would have been Jax in the middle of the room. And he would stumble over there. Sometimes he'd step on Jax en route someplace else, but sometimes he'd get right there and then take his slow descend and lay down. And when he did that, Jax would get up and leave the room. So fast forward, I'm talking to the vet and I asked opinion about what do I do with Jax when the time comes? So she assured me that dogs could handle death much better than they could abandonment. And had I left the house with Harley and returned without Harley, it may be confusing. Okay. So fast forward to Monday and the three of us are in the room with Harley and a different vet comes in. And this is a very small office. So you kind of know every veterinarian and which I think is good. You have your primary, but then it's like nobody's ever a stranger. So she came in and we were talking and she says, "Now, what are your plans with Jax?" So I reiterated what I'd been told earlier. And so she scratched her head and told me she never had another family pet in the room together. during this time. And so now I'm like, now what do we do? So I'm not going to leave him in the car. So I asked for one of his favorite vet techs, and she was working. And I said, if she would just take him upstairs and give him some crushed ice, you know, that's his jam. He loves it. And then bring him back when it's over, because it's important that he know that Harley's not coming home.
Mm-hmm.
Kimberly, Jax is such a Spicoli. They brought Jax back in. And Jax wasn't even fazed with Harley. Leah's sitting next to me. I'm on the floor holding Harley. Jax comes in, goes around the room, like, okay, am I getting an exam? What's happening? And so really shortly after that, we kind of left. But, you know, God works in mysterious ways in terms of how he creates all of us. And now, looking back, I honestly think that Jax was preparing himself far earlier than I could have ever wanted to fathom or agree that this was inevitable. He was preparing himself to be an only dog.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has not skipped a beat. When I think about it, for the last several months, at least two solid months, there was no movement from Harley, that we were walking them separately. So he has always been moving about the house for the last several weeks alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I agree. I mean, I saw the same thing with my dogs. One thing that I thought was interesting was before Sydney passed, Rodrigo started sleeping with her, which is something that he never did, you know, since he was a puppy. But I would walk into the room and he would be on one of the big barkers laying with her. And, you know, and I think that like with Scout, you know, he was fine until the end, but I noticed that he started slowing down, and Apollo, you know, who was his playmate, just started being more gentle with him. Mm-hmm. And Zoe would go up to him and just sort of like sniff around, and just the dogs, just how they interacted with him was just a little bit more care. And I knew what was happening, but I didn't want to say it out loud.
Yeah.
I appreciate his veterinarian, who she was so gentle about it, you know, just explaining, because I was just like, oh, well, this is happening. And she was like, well, you know, the cancer is back. So, you know, and that's da-da-da, but we're going to still do stuff, and we'll do stuff until we can't do anything anymore. So she was really gentle about helping me accept the fact that, you know, he was gone. And I kind of feel like, although, you know, ideally, I didn't even know if it's ideal, but in my head, I feel like sometimes it would be nice if they would just pass on gently in the night. But who wants to wake up to find out that their dog passed on without them being there with them? There's just something about that moment of just saying everything that you need to say and sending them on. But it was funny, not funny, but I guess, like we said, morbid funny, when I took Scout to help him transition, they left me in a room so I can have time with him. Mm-hmm. But I was just sort of like, I had a year and a half with him. It's time for him to go. It's not fair for me to keep him any longer. It's time for him to go. And you know, there it is. But it's odd, because every dog is different. How you respond and react to their passing is different, mm-hmm. but kind of the same too. It's just hard. It never gets easier. You know, I spent all weekend, you know, since I got your, I should say all weekend, but the last couple of days since I got your text, checking in on Rodrigo just to say, how you doing? Mm-hmm. What's going on? You know, and because he was limping pretty badly this weekend, but it was because he overdid it. And it's moments like this that I have to keep myself from hovering over him. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, you know, let him live his life. I mean, he's an old dog and he is different. He's not going to do the things that he's going to do, but he's still with us. He's still doing well.
We're hovering. The only thing we haven't done is cut up Jax's food and hand feed him. We're hovering. But it's our therapy.
You know,
that I wanted to talk today is that, you know, because I am going to get off of the phone. I wish that anybody that's listening to this, you know, I just want you to, when the time comes, and unfortunately, if you're loving a furry family member, the time is going to come. But when it comes, man, I can't stress enough to rely on your instincts and rely also on the medical professional that you entrust to care for your animals. I don't know where I got the thought to go and create this, at least for me, this quality of life appointment.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best thing I could have done.
Yeah. You
know, and be able to say, I don't want to call and talk to the receptionist, although the receptionists are vet techs there that, you know, have knowledge. I wanted exactly what I had gotten. And that was that damn near 2 hour, you know, discussion in the room with them and Harley. I didn't even bring Jax that day. Just so that I was paying to be as stupid as I needed to be. This was not an opportunity. This was not a time for Gray Google, as much of a fan that I am of his. But this was something that was, it had to be personal. It had to be visual. And it had to be all about Harley. So that I knew. And we talked about everything. Like, how far do you want to go with hospice? You know, and my whole thing is, and they were dumb questions when we started talking about loss of body control or body fluid control. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I actually asked, is that like degrading to a dog? Is that embarrassing? You know, I needed to know. I could talk to you about this. I could talk to every other dog or pet parent, and everybody's going to give their perception. But there are just a lot of questions that I probably will never, ever share that I asked because I needed to know. Short of an animal communicator, I wanted to know from a scientific clinical perspective of what was happening with my dog and when was I going to know that this was just too much for him, no matter mm-hmm. how strong he was, no matter how much he smiled, how much of it was too much.
Yeah.
The gift that he gave me, which I will leave with you all now, in my arms, as the medication was going through the catheter, I called his name and I asked him to go find Liam and to have the best life together until I got there. And, you know, this dog just turned his head and licked my face one more time.
No. Oh.
Is it? And he laid his head on my lap and he went to sleep.
That's so beautiful.
So that's how I know that, you know, all of this pain, I'm going to be okay, because I did the very best that I could for the dog that taught me everything I know about love, and about caring, sacrifice, and just living. And I can't ask for a better, like, last chapter.
Yeah. It's true. They come into our lives. They're not here you know, it's sort of like a blink of an eye. It feels like,
yeah.
You know, I still remember the day I brought Rodrigo home and everything that we did that day. And it's, you know, and same with all of my dogs. And it's just, it never gets easier, but I think you nailed it. They come here to teach us so much and to give us so much and to make us better. You know, I mean, I honestly believe that dogs bring me closer to God because it's just a reminder of how quick they forgive, you know, and how easy they are to make happy and how they enjoy every single moment. And I think it's so beautiful of you to have been so keyed into your dog that you knew when it was time to let go, because that is the hardest thing. You know, what you were talking about when he rallied, you keep waiting for that. I did that with Sydney. I kept waiting. What if tomorrow she rallies? What if things turn the corner tomorrow? And I didn't wait long enough. And she stayed with me until I was ready. And then I had a similar experience with her where I just asked, let me know. It's like, I'll be okay. But if you need to go, I'll let you go. And it was sort of like, I felt a feeling of just relief from her. And it probably was just me projecting, but still, I just felt that it was okay. And it was interesting because, man, when the whole process went so quickly that the veterinarian said that she was ready to go. She was probably ready to go like a week ago, but she stayed for me. And it's hard because I keep going back to something a veterinarian said to me. When you start having more bad days than good, then that's when it's time to start having these conversations. And I think that that's when you went for that quality of life. You know, that's a sign that you were starting to see that you were having more bad days than good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, you know, some dogs live to be 10, some dogs live to be 16. But I just want you to know that however old your dog gets to live, those were just, you know, cherish those years. I don't measure, you know, I always said that statistics said, you know, 10 to 12 years for a standard golden doodle. And I would always laugh and say that Harley was on Jesus' time. But
yeah,
you know, I now look at Harley as, you know, all the days of his life was Jesus' time. And yeah. We're going to be okay. There's, you know, big paw prints to fill. And, you know, he got me where I am in terms of what I do professionally and, you know, how I'm able to take this incredible creature called a dog and use their natural gift to help others. And that's what we're going to continue to do. He will always be with me. We're going to have to find another way to learn how to end our sessions because, you know, I don't have him to let me know it's 4 o'clock.
Yeah. But I'm not going to edit this episode because I don't feel like spending an hour crying. I'm just going to put it up.
Don't edit. Just put it up there.
I'm just going to put it up. Well, I'm so, so very sorry, Kathy.
I know you are. I know. But I had the best time with him.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So. All right, Gracie.
All right. Good night, Gracie.
Good night.